Just kidding.
If you have any discomfort during the experience, please signal a facilitator.
All right, this is Pure Decking number 197 for Friday, November the 20th, 2015. Morps, this is the show about stuff that interests me. We are doing this a day late because I was having some problems with the broadcast box yesterday. We're actually still having a problem in that I've just noticed a high-pitched whine on the stream. So I don't know how bad that's going to be in the recording. I'm going to let it go for now, and I'll slap a filter on there later, so hopefully that'll only be a one-time thing. I am currently drinking dragon's milk. Suave, what are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking Strongbow Cider.
Ooh, nice. Very nice. Madman, what are you drinking tonight?
Goose Island Winter Lager.
Hmm. So we're all drinking high class. Nice. At least if you consider dragon's milk high class. I do. I like it. But at least nobody's drinking a Bud Light, you know? That's...
I don't know. You know, Dragon's Milk, the whole Gen Con experience just kind of tied the whole thing to nerdy Gen Con goers. So saying Dragon's Milk and classy doesn't really fit in my mind.
That's fair. It's just funny to me because I go out drinking with some of the guys from work every once in a while, and a lot of them go nuts for Dragon's Milk, and I kind of have that same association. So it's just like, eh-heh. And they're not in on the joke, but that's okay. It's still a good beer. Hey, nobody's drinking peasant beer. How about that?
Okay, I'll give
I
you
love
that.
Peasant beer.
So, let's see. Yeah, we played the Pac-Man sound. Anyways, so, you know, Suave, you and I have been talking about it earlier, but so the whole government wanting to break encryption thing, especially after the Paris attacks, it's pretty much all you heard on the privacy front was that basically the populace should not be allowed to have encryption that the government can't get into. I don't know about you guys. Like, you know, I got the article here from Business Insider that John McCain wants to outlaw encryption that the U.S. government can't get into. You know, a couple of articles, lines from the article here. U.S. Senator John McCain has indicated he will push to outlaw encryption technology that the U.S. government is unable to crack. On Tuesday, he told reporters that in the Senate Armed Services Committee, we're going to have hearings on it, and we're going to have legislation, according to Hill, labeled the current state of affairs unacceptable. So, pretty much, McCain's saying he wants to outlaw encryption that the government doesn't have a backdoor on. And I don't know about anybody else following the the privacy front. Ever since the Paris attacks, that's all you've heard is, you know, people can't have communication methods that are outside of the reach of a subpoena. Which, I don't know about you guys, but my understanding was a subpoena was compelled compliance, turn over something you had. But, you know, if you can't be reasonably expected to produce what they're giving you a subpoena for, that's not a subpoena they should issue.
The way you get around encryption, if you're the government, it's called a warrant.
Yeah.
Like,
well, no, that's what they're saying, though, is they want to be able to go to Apple, hand Apple the warrant, not you, and say, we want to know what's on this guy's iPhone. So that you don't even know you're being monitored. That's what it really is. They want to continue to monitor even if you're encrypting.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
Well, that's not how any of this works. But, I mean, okay, if you really, really want to know what somebody's communications are, you have to bug the phone.
Yeah. The thing is, nobody's going to be using, like, their iPhone's encryption to keep their terrorist plot secret. Anybody who's like up on the up and up in any sort of digital technology.
You say that, but there was the articles floating around that they found one of the cell phones that belonged to one of the attackers in Paris, and they coordinated just using regular old SMS. It wasn't even using one of the fancy encryption things. But right after that attack, that's all you heard is, oh, they were using, you know, one of the 100 different, you know, messaging apps that claims it encrypts, and we can't have that because this could happen again, even though it turned out it was just SMS. They weren't even encrypted.
Yeah.
So it's like, what are you doing, NSA? I thought you were watching everybody's comms anyways.
Well, everybody's just turned into a bunch of pansies. You know, like, why is everybody so scared? You know, can't you just, like, I don't know, base a reaction on actual events? Like, how many people have died in North America from terrorist attacks versus, like, from, I don't know, moose, for example? Moose are way more dangerous than terrorists. We should
I don't have the moose murder statistics right here in front of me.
They're pretty deadly.
Deer are the deadliest animal in the U.S. Motorists hit them all the time and die.
Yeah. So, like it just look at statistics. Like, it's such a minor threat. Like, I bet you more people die from, like, lightning strikes than terrorist attacks in North America. And yet, look at the billions and trillions of dollars that are being thrown into this. It's retarded. And, like, all these people, like, are losing their mind over, like, these refugees that are coming in. They're like, oh, God, we can't let the refugees in. I am so afraid of terrorists that I will turn away the children fleeing their violence.
Well, okay, to be fair, most of the refugees are not children. They're young men, young Muslim men.
Well, I don't know about the United States, but the 25,000 that Canada's bringing in are mostly women and children who've been camps since, like, 2011. These are people who've been fleeing this violence for a very long time.
Sure.
If the terrorists want to go plant some fucking sleeper cell in some refugee camp and let them sit there for the last 5 years in the hopes they might get into Canada, you know what? Go nuts.
Well, you know, it comes down to some pretty basic stuff, though, on that front. It's like, okay, you have two bowls of candy. In this bowl, you know everything in it is perfectly safe. Now, I know this is not a perfect analogy, but in this bowl, there's, you know, it's a full big old bowl of Halloween candy. But one piece might have a razor blade. Which bowl are you going to take candy from, realistically?
Oh, I totally agree with you there. The only problem with that analogy is the bowl that doesn't have poison in it or razor blades or whatever doesn't exist.
That's why I said it's not a great analogy. But
a better analogy would be: would you like to take a candy from this real bowl that might have a poison candy in it, or would you like to take candy from, well, nothing because it doesn't exist?
Well, it's not just terrorism when you're looking at immigration. It's you want to take in a bunch of mostly uneducated individuals that, in a best case scenario, are going to be great people who aren't going to physically harm your community, but are going to use up funds from you're putting aside for welfare that they didn't contribute to, and drive down the price of unskilled labor during a time where the price of unskilled labor is at an all-time low, and you have portions of your population with a 90% out of work rate.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that for sure. But a lot of that's, like, cultural. Like, here in Canada, Quebec is, like, has huge problems with immigrants. Like, everybody's freaking out, and like, it's actually one of the most bigoted. It is the most bigoted province in Canada. That's where, like, the whole origin of this whole, like, fucking you can't wear religious headgear working for the government laws started coming out, and all this other sort of stuff. It's funny because, like, in the province where there's the most bigotry, it also ends up being the province where immigrants who come in have the highest rates of being on welfare and, like, living in ghettos and having, like, living up to the expectations of the people who are living there, pretty much. But for the rest of the Canada, like, you look at the statistics for immigrants being on welfare and, like, you know, joblessness and all this other sort of stuff, and it pretty much is on par with your average Canadian.
Well, okay,
it's
okay.
Just in the province where everybody's anti-immigrant is the only province where immigrants are having problems.
Oh,
and
okay.
I kind of wonder why that is.
But we're getting away from the topic of blacklisting.
Oh, yeah, okay. You're right.
But
right.
I will say the only thing I want to, just to wrap that up, I'm not certain that I would define being anti-immigrant as being bigoted. I think those might be different things.
But like when I say bigoted, I actually mean bigoted. Like the only places in Canada
want any of them darkies around here, kind of bigoted.
Yeah, like okay. On like brown people in Quebec mm-hmm. than anywhere else in Canada. You see like more like protests against the immigrants in Quebec than anywhere else in Canada.
Protesting against the immigrants just because you might have legitimate reasons to not want more immigrants.
So you
see
more protests against like people wearing religious headgear in Quebec.
Okay.
You know,
it's fine. I'm just not wanting to conflict terms here because there is actual bigotry, and then there's just simply saying, hey, I don't think we got to let X number of people into our country when you know this is their current state. I don't think that's a bigoted argument.
I think you can have a legitimate bigoted argument when people start saying, oh, yeah, well, all of these Islamists are, like, fucking savages and don't belong in our country. Like, that's the sort of shit you hear coming out of Quebec. Like, that's, it's not, they're not well-reasoned arguments. Let's just leave it at that.
That's fine. But yeah, I just don't want to conflate the terms because I do feel like you can have a legitimate political disagreement and it's not coming from racism.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and Madman actually had a very good legitimate argument there, but that's not really what's coming out of Quebec.
And back on the actual topic that got us to this, I don't think the government needs back doors and encryption.
The way they get into encryption
is we have a warrant, show us your files, and then if you don't show them the files, you're violation of a warrant. They can throw you in jail for contempt. Do you know what the term for contempt of court is? It's life in prison without a trial. So you can rot in a hole until you comply and then have a trial and have hopes of getting out or proving your innocence, or you can rot in a hole.
Well, okay, but there's some scary implication there. So it's you know, give us your files. Okay, here's my computer. Well, it's encrypted. What's the password? I forgot.
Cool. Here's your nice little hole. Eventually, you'll remember.
So you are okay with the concept of a court compelling you to give up your passwords?
If they have a warrant for your files, they have a warrant for your files. They have thrown people in jail for not telling them what encryptions were in mob books.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay. We have precedent for it.
The
court has rights to your files once they show this is our probable cause for Madman being a child-raping serial killer who fucks cats on the weekend.
Yeah. You don't need to discuss
your hobbies here. We're talking hypotheticals, Madman.
But that's a really good point. Like, I think that there should be something in place to compel somebody to, you know, give up their passwords, because I'm sure there's situations where that could be useful. Some fucking serial killer hides a bunch of people buried in underground fucking oxygen-deprived canisters, and the only way to get them out is to get his password so you can find their locations on a cell phone or something stupid like that. Okay, I've been watching too much CSI, but you know what I mean. But I think the big issue is, like, the secret courts and, like, the rubber stamp warrants that are getting put out. I think there actually needs to be some actual oversight and, you know, not secret courts and all of this other sort of stuff.
Yeah, I absolutely disagree with it. Hey, we have an incoming Sard. Absolutely disagree with the secret courts. Sard, what are you drinking, and do you believe courts should be allowed to compel you to give up your passwords?
Shit. I just got home, so I don't have anything yet. No, they should not be able to force anyone to give up their passwords.
Even if they have a warrant to your files.
They have a warrant to your files.
We're talking about how after the Paris attacks, all governments basically want backdoors on encrypted communications, even though it has since come out that the Paris attackers used unencrypted SMS to coordinate when they were going to start. Mm-hmm. You know, you still have like John McCain saying he wants to outlaw any encryption that the government can't get into.
Well, what about the whole thing where you can't self-incriminate?
You know,
with the whole "I can't self-incriminate," you have a warrant for your files. If I hand over my files that are in English where anyone can read, I'm incriminating myself. Self-incrimination doesn't get around a warrant. You can't testify against yourself. But if you have hard copies of evidence, you can't destroy evidence and claim, well, if I didn't burn that body and spread its ashes over 50 states, I was incriminating myself.
Man, stop talking about your weekend hobbies. But look,
if I make it sound outlandish enough, they will never suspect me. You don't
go
after the guy talking about the crime. It would be that stupid.
But, you know, there is the very real point that Sard brings up, that if they seize a hard drive and say, these are your files, you know, we have a warrant for your files, you have to give us the password, and you say, those aren't my files, I don't have the password.
Well,
because if you provide the password, that is proof of ownership.
Right, and they have your files. They might not be able to read them, but they have them.
Well, Madman brought up the point earlier that they were going after, you know, because mob books were kept encrypted. It was analog encryption, but they actually...
Explain
that again, Madman.
Normally it's just a number encryption. Each letter is assigned a number. It's a basic one.
Basic Caesar cipher, okay.
Yeah. They have compelled people to give up the ciphers.
Well, when you say compel, does that mean beat the shit out of them until they gave up the password?
You're in contempt of court. We had a warrant. You're not providing the information. And these are people that admitted to having the information. I'll have to throw that out there, too.
Okay.
So,
well,
they were in contempt of court and just held in a prison cell, just like, you're in contempt. Eventually, you'll stop being in contempt when you comply. Now, the argument of, I don't have the password to give you, is a slightly different argument. You're saying, it's not my file. I've given you the property that you've asked for. I host, I don't know, a file service for 1,000 different companies. Well, then you need to go to the company whose files you're after on that cloud service and show them, here's the warrant for your files. Give us your files.
Okay, so if you have admitted that, yes, it's your stuff, you're okay with a warrant compelling the password, but if you're contesting that that's not my shit, then that's a different argument. Okay.
Yeah, like if Apple's cloud service, if I rent how much ever storage and then encrypt my shit and then send it to Apple encrypted, they don't have the encryption. Showing up to Apple with a warrant saying, we want all of your servers, well, I would argue that they're not our servers. They're our individual client servers. Go to our clients and present the warrant for whoever you want.
Well,
because it is their information.
This raises an interesting point, though. And I'm not generally in favor of the idea of compelling passwords, because you are compelling the retrieval of knowledge that may not be contained anywhere but in the person's head, and that has some implications. And from a logical standpoint, it's a slippery slope argument, and I know that's a logical fallacy, but we are dealing with government and law, which are not necessarily logical. So
and
a logical fallacy might actually be a thing.
History does show that the slippery slope is a fallacy, but it's a fallacy that exists.
Well, okay. My point is that, if you're dealing with a purely logical argument, it's a logical fallacy. But if you're dealing with people who are inherently illogical, I'm not certain that, you know, because it's a logical fallacy means you can just throw it out. So I am worried about the slippery slope aspect of it. But so if you're saying, though, if the court can prove ownership, that they can compel you to give up a password, even if you're contesting that it's not yours. And proving ownership may simply be a matter of possession. So, I don't know. That gets weird quick. Because it's like, oh, well, we saw your IP address log into this server. Therefore, we're claiming you own this. You're now compelled to give us the password.
And if you don't own it, you can try to show, hi, my box was infected. Some dude in Korea set up a file server on it.
Give us the password. Give us the password, dude. It's malware locker. It's crypto locker. I don't have the password. I didn't pay those assholes any Bitcoin. You could pay the Bitcoin for me.
You know, like, I'd say that they'd have to prove that you know the password in order to compel it from you.
That's what I was thinking. How do they prove that? How do they prove that you know the password, you're just refusing to give it?
You know, if they can prove that, like, you were the only person in the house when this was logged into, or, you know, something like that.
You know, actual police work, as opposed to just sitting on their ass and expecting a company to hand it to them.
But at the same time,
if they had to prove that you, like, within a reasonable doubt that you knew the password, then at least you're not going to run into situations where you don't know the password and you're just locked up forever.
Well, look at it this way. We'll go with the case they're going with. I've encrypted a cell phone's messages on my cell phone or sending it to someone else. My cell phone carrier will just say Apple because I like, not Apple, AT&T because I like picking on them. Can't go to AT&T and request the password because I'm not using their encryption. It's just an encryption program I've got. They don't know the password. Well, you have a warrant for Madman's cell phone, or else you wouldn't be getting this shit in the first place. I signed the contract. It's my phone. I've shown ownership of it. You go to me. You present the warrant. If I don't comply, I'm fucked. But I still want a warrant.
Yeah.
And on ownership of files, I don't think possession on some business models is ownership. The iCloud, I purchased space on it. Those are my files. You don't get a warrant for Apple for everything they have because they have things from 1,000 different businesses and millions of different people. You say, so-and-so's files, here's a warrant, you go to so-and-so, and you get their files.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm kind of okay with the idea of if they can prove you know the password, because that means they've at least done some investigatory work outside of just monitoring communications and hoping for the best.
I still don't think they can prove that you know the password, though. Because it's the same thing like you were saying before. You could, if it's malware locked, sure, it could be in your possession. You could be the only person that logged on that box. But you still don't have that password. It reminded me of the Pirate Bay founder, Gottfried Svartholm. He was accused of hacking.
Oh, those guys have been hounded to death, though. I mean, didn't one end up in prison?
Yeah, Gottfried did. He just spent like 3-4 years in prison because they convicted him on hacking charges. But his whole defense was, it wasn't me. My box got owned. You know, so anyone can connect to your box from anywhere in the world. Remotely, even though you were the only one that was logged onto it at the time, that doesn't necessarily mean that it was you.
So,
in our system, it's reasonable doubt. Show how your box was owned, or that your box was owned, and I keep a
non-passworded VNC shell installed on all of my systems just in case of arrest.
just in case, I hit a script, port forwarding opens that shit to the internet, and we just let it run wild.
In case of arrest, I keep VNC installed on all my systems.
Exactly. Exactly.
And Meterpreter was installed on all of my systems. We think you put Meterpreter on all of your own systems. Why the fuck would I do that? In case you got arrested? Oh, well, that's because you said you would on the internet? Damn it.
I didn't think my show was this popular, sir. Can I use that as a defense?
To be fair, Your Honor, how long have you been a listener?
Mandating back doors is mandating a flawed product. I don't want to buy shit.
And, I want to buy actual good stuff. It does nothing, because, you know, like, if you go and you go approach all legitimate crypto businesses out there and you get them all to put in back doors, you're just going to run into a Bitcoin situation where somebody's going to anonymously release some open source code that doesn't have a back door.
Or stuff that already exists.
Yeah,
you know.
So like, it's a useless thing. Even the stuff that already exists, like probably everything has some sort of flaw, and they've probably cracked a lot of things that we don't think they've cracked. But and you know, give them enough time, and they'll probably get about everything that exists right now. Especially considering like increasing computing power.
When the quantum bit becomes feasible for commercial use, they'll crack everything.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking they pounded for like 2 years on some Brazilian guy's laptop and it had a TrueCrypt volume on it and they couldn't crack it.
Right.
And, you know, the way TrueCrypt went down, I've always kind of figured they were coerced and that the the last functional version they put out was probably pretty good. In fact, I saw the article. I don't have it for I didn't grab it for decking because I didn't think we'd end up talking about it. But hell, they just put out one of the security assessments of the last version of TrueCrypt and said it's, you know, it's still pretty good. So I don't know. You know, this you're right though that I mean, yeah, somebody's going to put out an open source free encryption anyways, which means you'll just have a BitTorrent situation of, oh, you're using BitTorrent, you're a criminal. Oh, you're using encryption, possible. You're a criminal. So
just but really, the people who are using it are already criminals. So
thanks.
So I guess it depends. Well, you know what I mean. Like, generally speaking, if you want to hide stuff from the authorities, it's because you would get in trouble if the authorities found it. That's not always the
case.
That
is not true, sir.
No, I said
that is not true.
I said that's not always the case, but generally speaking, that is the case.
NIST guidelines, official guidelines for corporate laptops, insist on any portable machine using encrypted hard drives in case of that machine's theft.
And I'll give you that, but I bet you anything that corporation wouldn't have any problems giving the encryption key to the authorities.
If they showed up with
with a warrant.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. They need a warrant. What McCain is wanting is for the government to be able to search any file anywhere without due process. And that's fucked up.
Yeah, okay. I agree.
It's already within the system. If they show up with a warrant, they can get what they want.
All right. So let's move on here. Because we're circling, but I think we're all generally agreeing that government backdoors are probably not a good idea.
Not a good idea at all.
Almost miss having Static around. He did at least argue the other way just to be contrarian. anyways, so next article up. And, you know, Sard, you didn't get to hear it because I'm sure right now we're getting a bit of a hum on the stream because I had to rewire the broadcast box. But the soundboard is running so much cleaner now. It's so much better. Like, it's not all broken and everything.
Oh, cool. Na 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 Sard.
Notice was no crackling. There was no techno-ish qualities to... to anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, our sound effects play back through TeamSpeak. And they always sounded terrible. And then this last rewiring I've done has fixed a lot of that. So, I mean, of course, it sounded fine on the stream and in the recording. But I think I've introduced a ground loop, which is where the hum on the stream is coming from. I'll have that fixed for next week. But anyways, I shouldn't be looking at these links during the show. Sard or Suave, what are you posting? Oh, my God. Is that Photoshopped?
No, that's real. Well, fake, but real.
Fake, but real.
Oh, why? So she's wearing plastic tits over her regular tits.
Yeah.
Wow, that's fucked up. Okay. thanks
totally
for that.
Totally derailed the whole show right there.
It's like, holy shit, what the hell am I looking at?
In case anybody's wondering, it is a picture of Miley Cyrus with a giant strap on and fake tits. Just in case you're curious.
Wow. Right. So, next story up is from The Register. So Carnegie Mellon has had several articles out about how apparently the FBI paid them for their Tor de-anonymization research. Well, Carnegie Mellon has finally put out a statement saying that yes, they gave the shut up, Swamp. Yes, they gave the research over, but basically it was because the FBI subpoenaed them for it. Not that they got paid for it.
Yeah.
And considering their research, they say their research division is already federally funded, so... Yeah. But when
if the research division's already federally funded, then they did pay them for it, and I can see them arguing they have a right to the information.
Well, what they actually wanted from them was apparently as part of their research project, they had de-anonymized a chunk of Tor data. I saw a number when I was looking at this earlier. I don't see it now, though. But, I mean, it was, if I remember right, it was like in the 20% range or something like that. But they had de-anonymized a chunk of it, and it wasn't, you know, how they're de-anonymizing. They wanted the actual data. They had, you know, who's who on Tor that they had worked out. So, on one hand, I'm not sure that I like subpoenas being able to grab research like that. That kind of has a yeah to it, you know?
You know, I'm okay with warrants grabbing the data, grabbing the research itself. The whole thing where they're like, so they've de-anonymized a bunch of Tor users.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of flows into the same case as like, Apple with a bunch of servers and everything. Like that data belongs to those people and should be kept proprietary. And I think if you want information on a specific individual, they ought to be able to get the data on that individual via warrant. But getting like a blanket warrant for all their data. Guaranteed there's innocent people who are getting de-anonymized, and that's just that data is just getting given up. So there's essentially gotta, like innocent people who are getting hit by this.
Yeah, because Tor is always portrayed as like this den of horribleness and all this other stuff, but there's more to it than that. I mean, yeah, that goes on. Sure, there's the Silk Road stuff.
I'd say that probably accounts for a large majority of Tor traffic. But that doesn't mean that there aren't legitimate uses.
You have a chunk of Tor traffic that's certainly that, and I would even let you argue that a lot of people using the hidden services on Tor.
Yeah.
Probably a majority of the hidden services is stuff that's probably less than legal.
Oh yeah. But, well, if you just like you go to the hidden wiki and you just like look through all the stuff that's listed on there.
Oh sure.
Yeah, the majority of those things are illegal.
Yeah. I'm not even arguing that. But with Tor, you're not just hitting Tor services. You can use Tor to bounce out and hit legitimate websites.
Oh yeah.
So you do have people who are using it to circumvent censorship, which was the original intent.
Yeah.
And you do have other people who use it just out of paranoia, or maybe they think their ISP might be watching them, and of course you've always got the people who are using it to pirate because they don't want to get DMCA complaints. So, even though that's less than legal as well, I don't think that's quite to the same level as the shit they're talking about with Tor.
Yeah.
So, for some people just use it like a VPN.
The research on how to unencrypt Tor, that the government had a right to because they funded it. The actual chunk of data, I think they should get warrants for each individual whose data they want.
Yeah.
And really, like the whole idea behind like research being like, especially from like a public institution, I honestly think any research done should be freely available to anybody who wants it.
If it's been federally funded, yeah, because that's my money.
Yeah, and
it
should just publish it. Yeah.
There shouldn't even be a warrant required for that aspect of things.
Sard, you've been quiet.
I've just been sitting here wondering, how did they de-anonymize that data?
There's lots of ways to do it. There's some pretty interesting tricks. It depends on there's two main ways to do it. The first way is observing traffic and they've sent out something that identifies them. Like maybe you have some idiot using Tor and logging into their Facebook account. That might be one way to do
okay.
it. Or so perhaps they're identifying themselves in some way. Maybe they're logging into an account, or maybe they're posting something that gives away who they are. There's lots of things they could do. I mean, maybe they sign into World of Warcraft and that.
Like metadata on an image they upload. Like
sure, something like that.
There's lots of
things. And you can do that just by watching the Tor exit, run a Tor exit and watch the traffic that goes out.
Yeah, and that's what
besides
I was gonna
say. Horrified at some of the shit people do. you can collect it that way. The other way to do it would be to stand up. Either do some kind of a code injection on a Tor node as it's sucking data in from the clear web, or stand up a service on Tor such that it would run code on whoever connected to its machine that would cause it to beacon out in some way across the clear net that would identify them. So as a way to do this, let's say I stood up a Tor exit node, and then I pointed that Tor exit node at a proxy server that any connections coming through it over... not HTTPS, because, or hell, maybe I bought a code signing cert or stole one, who knows, where I can actually sign certificates so I can actually do SSL man in the middle correctly, so that I can actually inject JavaScript code say, the Beef Exploitation Framework or something, on any web page that goes through it, that would cause people's browsers to beacon out. But
now, here's the question. Is that, are you legally allowed to do that?
No, because you're inducing somebody else's machine to run code illegally. That violates right. computer fraud and abuse.
So guaranteed so, that's not how that university was doing it.
Probably. There's a high likelihood that they were not doing it that way, because that way
if they were writing papers to be published, guaranteed that's not how they were doing it.
There are security researchers who at one point tried to make the argument that if your machine was running code that was attacking my system, I should have the right to stop that code on your machine. And that argument went nowhere. It's like, no, you do not have the right to touch somebody else's machine, period, full stop. The whole concept of hacking back is not a valid one for that very reason alone.
Which is really a bummer. There's kind of a funny story about that, because an old director of mine, like 2-3 directors ago, he would come over and we'd tell him, like, yeah, we had this brute force on our terminal server or something like that, or this virus got in. He's like, well, do we know where it came from? Can we hack them back? And we're always like, no. He was totally serious. It was pretty funny.
I scared the shit out of my current boss, because we had somebody try to do a pretty specific spearfish, and they didn't do a very good job of it. So I tracked them down. I figured out their real name. I figured out where they sent the email from. And I did all this basically through advanced Google dorking, right? And so I go in and hand my boss this report, and he starts flipping through it, and he goes, did you hack them back? No.
Yeah. It's all publicly
he then shuts
public information.
The door. He then shuts the door and says, okay, with all, you know, really, did you hack them back? It's like, well, I thought about it. There's everything I need to do it in there.
He goes, do I have your authorization, sir, now that the door's closed?
He said, fuck no. I'm like, they're in India. There's not going to be any legal repercussions, I promise you. He thought about it for a minute. And he said, no. Because he was like, wait a minute. You can do that? Yeah, I can do that. Huh. No. Like, shit, it wouldn't have been that hard, everything I had on that guy. Basically, what he did was he sent it from a personal email account out of a web cafe in India. And I'm not going to get – I actually had it down to what coffee shop, but I'm not going to get any narrow – I don't want to work stuff, right? But anyways, because he used his personal email account, I mean, it was not hard – because he didn't spoof the headers correctly. I mean, you never would have saw any of it in your client, but if you went and actually looked at the headers, it was all there. And then at that point, it was all just about the Google dorking. So, yeah. Did I throw the next link in yet? No. No, it's still on Suave's Dragon Dildo picture there. So let's... next link. This one's from VentureBeat. So, I don't know if anybody else has seen the YouTube Red stuff, where you can pay a subscription, you can sign up to YouTube as a subscription fee, and supposedly they won't show you ads, you just pay the fee, and that way you can, you know, if you run ad block, you could still support channels you like if they didn't have, like, a Patreon and you wanted to do that kind of thing. I don't know about you guys if that's a thing where you want to, you know, have channels you would actually support or not.
There's a couple, they have Patreon accounts.
Yeah. So I kind of, that's kind of the way I look at it too. It's like, fuck the YouTube ad revenue. Just go straight to Patreon or.
Yeah. Cause if I want to support them, the percentage YouTube is going to give them where it might add up with enough people doing it. It's
minimal.
Pennies.
Yeah, exactly. So it's
I heard one YouTuber on another podcast I listened to. I heard a YouTuber talk about how they get 100 million views and then like a $200 check. So it's just like, wow.
Yeah.
So, that's not how people are doing that, monetizing that anymore. I heard, I guess, someone else was talking about this earlier this week. Leo Laporte is all like super pissed about people that use ad block, and it's like, come on, dude. No one No, everyone runs that shit. No one wants to look at ads. There's other ways of making revenue.
We all saw the YouTube video of the guy who talked about people who use ad blocker stealing. I mean, we all saw that shit.
Yeah,
so,
I didn't, but I don't. I totally believe
I'll
it.
I'll find the video.
Know.
Please,
it's just,
don't worry about it.
I'm sure it's whiny bitchiness.
Anyways, though, I bring up the YouTube Red thing because they're partnering with some of their bigger channels to produce specific content. And then this story comes out from VentureBeat. YouTube is making moves to protect users from questionable DMCA takedown notices by offering to protect some creators by paying up to $1 million in legal costs. So pretty much they're going after people who send them spurious DMCA complaints when it's actually fair use. And I think they're picking and choosing the channels they're going to defend. So I have to assume these
That's
are the channels
kind of
that make
bullshit.
Them the most money. But what well, not
kind
really, not
of.
Really. Because if you think about it, if YouTube is actively defending some of these fair use videos, that's going to cut down some of this shit.
Oh yeah,
you know, you just get your videos shut down for no damn reason.
And, right. and you know, like the amount of content that's added to YouTube every second is just ridiculous. Like, there's no way that they could possibly mount legal defenses for every single video on their service and even become remotely close to making a profit in any way whatsoever. So, you know, I understand them why they would pick and choose. But, you know, my big concern about the whole, like, YouTube Red thing anyways, like, you know, as of right now, YouTube ads are pretty unobtrusive. You know, you wait 5 seconds, click next. It's not a big deal. But if they're monetizing people skipping ads, that's just going to incentivize them to set things up so the ads are more obtrusive to make people want to pay to get rid of the ads. So I predict that this whole YouTube Red is going to usher in a whole new age of way more annoying ads on YouTube.
Well, that's actually a really good point. And the point I was going to make is that on some of the devices, sure, ad block on your regular computer is not too hard to run, but I haven't had much luck getting Adblock working on I've got an Amazon box I use to watch some stuff every once in a while. Because some of these YouTube channels, especially the ones that do, you know, 1080p, some of the higher stuff, look great on my big screen. That's cool. But, it's kind of nice being able to veg out on the couch as opposed to sitting in front of the computer to watch some of this stuff. But I haven't had much luck with the Adblock on the Amazon box. I tried it with one of the Raspis using the thing I did in Digital Dojo a few months ago where it was actually a little filter on your DMCA, and it just kind of broke everything. So haven't had much luck with that guy yet, but I have had luck on the phone front using some of the ad blockers there, but YouTube ads seem to get around it every once in a while, especially on the devices. So if nothing else, if you watch a lot of YouTube, the Red might be worth it just for the devices, you know what I mean?
Well, not to mention the fact that I think it was just recently where when YouTube like instituted the YouTube Red or whatever, they actually had a bug where if you had Adblock installed, it just all it did was play the ad. And
oh, damn.
There was no video.
Well,
I think they patched it right away, but it basically just plays the whole ad and you can't skip it or anything.
Yeah.
And everybody was freaking out because they thought they were doing it intentionally to like screw over people who were using Adblock, and it turned out it was just like they had a bug.
Yeah,
they actually fixed it.
Well, but they've got a music service tied to that YouTube Red thing too, which I haven't really looked into it that much. I just read up on a little bit for that article on their fair use because I'm like, oh shit, they're actually going to start defending people who are doing the right thing? No, they're not. They've got channels picked out they're going to defend with the hopes that's, you know, if they start defending a few, that's going to get everybody to back off on the mess because they won't know which ones they're defending, right? But I don't know that that's going to do jack for the people who, upload the sounds of birds or wind and then claim the ad revenue from your video for 30 days. Now, that kind of bullshit that still goes on. Which is why, I know I've talked about it several times, I'm getting close. I think I'm going to have to order a hardware screen recorder, though, for my current setup, which kind of sucks. But, get like one of those HDMI capture boxes. So when I start doing these Linux tutorials I've been talking about, I'm not going to turn ads on. I'm just not even going to bother with it. I'm not going to monetize on YouTube at all. I may eventually set up a Patreon. I even thought about doing that for the station, but I don't want to involve financials with the station. You know what I mean?
Right. Probably more hassle than it's worth, anyway.
Well, it gets weird if you have like a Patreon to run Galaxy 15 Radio, and then we're playing artists and not paying them.
Right.
Even if it's just a
conflict
Patreon
of interest
just pay...
type thing. Right.
Well, it's not even really a conflict of interest, because if I put up a Patreon for the station, it'd be like, hey, it'd be cool if we made $100 a month to cover the cost of the running the station.
You might not do a Patreon for the station, but you might do a Patreon for Pure Decking. That's your content
about...
that you're individually creating.
Well, that's true, and I hadn't thought about breaking it down that precisely, because I don't really separate Decking from the station in my head, even though you're right, they are separate entities. I don't know. That's I don't know that we have enough listeners to bother. Whereas the YouTube thing, I'm hoping to pick up some of the Linux people and maybe get some more people that way, and you know, maybe even drive people back to the station from the YouTube thing. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. did I throw the next? Yes, the next article is from Ars Technica, basically proving right a prediction I made, 2 years ago. And so no, Sard, I did not break in there. Sard, you can talk about that. We're talking station shit. Why not?
Yeah, we just had some other listeners that were looking for us in IRC. Unfortunately, it was like 2 a.m. my time, so I didn't get to talk to them. But we've had some new people in IRC. So
well, I've noticed
cool.
Somebody's been posting the shows straight up on Reddit, and that's kind of cool, because I bet more people are getting to it that way than they are through the beta page.
Yeah.
I never did go back and fix the main one. I may just clean up that WordPress install and merge them together. Be done with it.
Whatever works, kind of, man.
I was wanting to get off WordPress, because WordPress seems to have tons of problems, but
right.
I haven't really found anything I like better short of just coding it myself, and I don't have time to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Fucking job. Set up the Patreon so I don't have to work, right?
Yeah.
Me and my fucking successful career. God.
Yeah. Well, you're not wrong. anyway, so Comcast has basically proved a prediction I made a little while back. I don't actually remember how long ago I made this joke, but we were talking about net neutrality, and it wasn't going to be, you know, I didn't think it was going to be people censoring. It was going to be these bandwidth caps, and here Comcast is doing it. They're launching a streaming TV service that doesn't count against your data cap. So.
Wait, what happened to net neutrality? Is that gone now, I guess?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly what we were fighting against.
Well, everyone was arguing net neutrality, worried that the ISPs were going to censor content. And I've always said, no, they're not going to bother censoring. They're just going to have data caps, which is what we've been talking about, because net neutrality doesn't touch those. And then the content that they like, they're not going to count against your data cap.
I.e. the content that the providers pay them to like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's yeah, so they're launching their own TV streaming that doesn't count against their cap. Considering your caps are pretty low if you're stuck on Comcast, it's probably worth using just for that reason alone.
And are they charging separately from their cable service for their streaming?
Live has been launched in Boston and Chicago with plans to announce it. Blah, 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 blah. Comcast to the FAQ. Stream TV is a cable streaming service delivered over Comcast cable system, not over the internet. Therefore, Stream TV usage will not be counted toward your Xfinity monthly data usage. Doesn't affect a lot of bandwidth. Stream TV is intended for internet-only customers. Offering live TV on computers, tablets. No, it looks like it's part of your cable plan.
I know, I believe Time Warner's doing something similar. I don't use it because it would involve me creating an account using their email address, which I don't even remember what the one they assigned me is, or how to log into it, because I'd never use that crap. But it's streaming certain channels, but you get commercials.
I got you.
So the same, they're getting the same revenue they would have gotten from me watching it on my cable television in my living room, except it's on my computer while I'm playing a video game.
Well, I think the big thing for them is not so much, you know, we're kind of odd man out because of the way we use our systems and what we do. Most people, when they're doing the streaming stuff, it's because they're sitting on like an iPad or an Android tablet. So they want the streaming so they can watch TV on their iPad, not so much so they can watch it on their computer while they game. But, yeah, I don't know. I just, they're basically saying it doesn't count towards your data cap because it's not really coming in over the internet. They're using their data services to send it, but it's not like internet data. It's their own data. So that means they're probably running an encoding farm somewhere. Actually, considering the way cable TV works, they're probably just letting you tap into the existing MPEG streams.
But since it's going over their lines where my internet's going, isn't that using the bandwidth that would have gone to my internet?
Oh, yeah. Same infrastructure, yeah.
Yeah, so it's still going over IP. They're just saying it's not internet.
Yeah.
But what I would argue is
bullshit.
You're now trying to charge, if they charge for this package separately, you're now trying to charge me for a package I'm already paying for, and you're attempting to cut out competition. Are we seeing a trust act here? Antitrust, possibly?
No, no. What we're seeing is Comcast flipping down the little nipple flaps and starting to rub them while saying, oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I know Comcast customers are just going to get fucked. I'm sorry. You don't have enough money to matter. But Netflix, on the other hand, can afford a fucking lawyer.
Well, yeah, exactly. Netflix has already given in, dude. The fucking internet fast track or whatever, Fastlane, is already here. It's bullshit.
Well, the Fastlane was just they're paying to get their crap over the network. Okay. But now Comcast is saying to the customers of Netflix, we're going to limit what you can watch from them because it's them. But we'll sell you the same service for the same price and not fuck with the rest of your internet. Would you like to buy from us instead of Netflix?
I believe the phrase is they have you by the short and curlies.
Yeah, but Netflix's argument is they're now taxing our service, I'm thinking. They're trying to get us. We're paying to put our stuff over the internet through Comcast. But Comcast is now denying our service to individuals.
Yeah, it's simply unfair competition because internet connection is supposed to be a dumb pipe.
Yeah.
And the ISPs don't want to be a dumb pipe. They want.
I'm not phrasing it correctly,
content.
But I think they may have an antitrust suit brewing.
I wouldn't argue that the ISPs don't have a trust going on because, I mean, it's not one company, but it might as well be for the choice you get in the matter. There's no competition among ISPs, and that's a common problem. If we actually had choice of ISPs, you'd see a lot of this shit just disappear.
Right.
Wouldn't see this crap with data caps and because if you could be like, well, okay, Comcast is going to charge me X and treat me like crap and give me a data cap, whereas non-existent cable internet provider B, maybe they have data craps, but at least, you know, when you call in, you don't get treated like crap. Maybe your bill actually matches what they said it would be. I don't know. Has anybody else actually had Comcast for service?
No.
Thank God.
Hell no. Thank God.
They lie. I had them for a year. They fucking lie. They tell you what your
they
bill's going to be.
Lie.
When you get it, it's different. And when you call them and ask them about it, oh, yeah, there's all these service fees and all this other. I mean, yeah, so your bill is double what they said it would be.
Yep.
And you know,
that's not limited to Comcast. Just about every ISP or cell phone provider or cable provider I've ever used, it's always like that. You go into the store, it's like, I would like the $65 plan, please. You get your first bill, and it's like $95
yeah.
or more.
It's almost always double what you're expecting it to be. And it's just like, what is all this? And it's like, oh, fees, stuff we made up, just, you know, usage. Hell, I had Comcast charge me a service fee when they sent a guy out, but he didn't actually fix the problem. And they still charged me the service fee to fix it. Because I think what happened was the guy they sent out lied on his paperwork and said he fixed it when he didn't. But basically, and when I said, hey, he didn't even fix the problem, he just fiddle farted around with the wire for a bit, ran a new cable, didn't fix anything, and left. You know what the person on the phone said? Oh yeah, sorry about that. Aren't you going to take the fee off? No. Yeah, they don't give a shit because they know you don't have a choice.
Right.
So it's like, okay, I'm just going to cancel and go with some other internet provider. Oh yeah, what internet provider is that? Fuck.
Crickets. Crickets.
Yeah, because there isn't one. Whereas if you had a little bit of competition, I'm not saying I want 30 ISPs competing, but you know, more than one would be nice.
Yeah.
If you had a real option other than, you know, cable internet, which is usable, or DSL, which isn't, or cell phone internet, which is usable until you use it up.
I would just remove the monopoly that each city grants. If you can feasibly get up the capital to start one, start one. There won't be 30.
Yeah, that's what drives me nuts, is that you can't even start another one without getting sued into the ground.
Even if you get far enough to get the capital, you can't start one depending on what technology you're using, simply because the government will say no. It's not even getting to the court system. It's just no.
Yeah, it's just you're not even allowed. I'm trying to find an article because it would be hilarious. But did anybody else see the video Chattanooga, Tennessee put out on warning people about the deep web?
No.
Oh, it's hilariously bad. I mean, it's up there with the, you know, what was it, the NCIS description of IRC, and they even used that stupid iceberg picture where they've re-rendered it, but I mean, it's still that damned iceberg picture you always see explaining the deep web.
Jeez.
So it's just like, oh my god, they're basically talking about how horrible Tor is. And I can't find the link because I wanted to talk about it in the show, but I can't find it. So what we are going to talk about is this is from motherboard.vice.com. Walmart is now selling a TracFone branded LG smartphone that costs $982. And it's running an old-ass version of Android, and it's not a very powerful phone, but it's a $10 smartphone that at least has some better specs than the original iPhone. Bigger screen, better camera, probably a faster processor than the original iPhone for $10 at Walmart.
I wish they listed the actual CPU specs and like how much memory it has and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, we could probably Google it and see what it is.
They list the size of the display. It has 3G and Wi-Fi and a camera. Those are the specs they list in the article. It's like, really? Come on, guys.
If you actually go to the Walmart page, LG TracFone LG prepaid Lucky LG 16 smartphone for $9.82. Android 4.4. Oh, I figured that'd be still running like an Android 2. 3 megapixel camera, 1.2 gigahertz dual core processor, 4 gig micro SD card, 3G Wi-Fi, so it's not even a 4G phone.
$10, what do you expect?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
it's cool for
an Android,
a burner phone, but that's all it is, though,
is that burner phones are now to the point where they're running basically a cheapy Android smartphone for burner phones.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it's a 1.2 dual core. That's not terrible.
Dude, like, I'm just thinking, like, what can you hack this thing into? Like, $10 for a cellular device with
a 1.2 gig... Get Cyanogen mod on it, you're probably not going to be playing high-end games on it, but I'll bet you could do all kinds of other crap with it.
No, that's a perfect
I'm just
Dropbox,
thinking, like,
dude.
You know, data tethering and stuff. So, like, what if you guy wanted to like build a cell-powered drone or something like that, or you're like, fuck, who knows,
or something like that.
You know, like it's pretty much it's so cheap you'd throw it away. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah,
actually, there's a phone image called the Pony Phone or Pone Phone. It's from Pony Express. It's actually that image is meant for other things, specifically the Nexus line. But I'm seeing if you could build an image or maybe even port the Pone Phone image to it. Because it's a cell phone, you could literally you know, hide under a desk, tape to the underside of a desk, run a power cord to it so it doesn't die, and use it like a black box or something to get into a network. I mean,
exactly, man.
Or just leave it somewhere, like a Dropbox, like you were saying. Yeah, I mean, shit. Yep. For $10,
who cares? Yeah.
So that's just showing to the point we've gotten with these things.
That's crazy.
I almost wonder if it's being subsidized, because I can't see them manufacturing that for $10.
It's probably old inventory, so they're probably not the same exact phone. They're probably rebranding old phones that they couldn't move.
That makes sense.
So, but still, $10. Yeah. That's not going to change. What the $10 phone is going to change, but there's going to be $10 smartphones. I mean, everywhere now. If you want an older phone, or you don't care about it being an older phone, you just want to get a track phone, and it's still a smartphone, so you can still get your email, still do Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, shit, that's...
You gotta think, how much do you do on a phone? I don't game on a phone. The smartest thing I regularly use my phone for is if I'm driving in a city I don't know, I pull up the GPS map.
Yeah.
A lot of people, a $10 smartphone is all they'll need.
Oh, yeah. I'd even go as far as saying the majority of people, a $10 smartphone is all they need.
I've ran Backtrack on my phone before, so I'm probably not the right person to be.
I'd say probably pretty much everybody here does not fall into that category.
You know what? I think this is a good reason. Next time RU comes to the States, we hook him up with a $10 cell phone. He finally has one.
We'll get like five.
Yeah, exactly. But then when he throws it out the window and tells us to fuck off, cunt, we won't lose that much money.
No, you just hand him another one.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like we took up a collection. You're going to be at this for a while.
Yeah.
No. Are you? You missed a step. You do something stupid with the phone, then you throw it out the window.
And remember, are you? Don't tether it to the car. You'll get bad pictures on it.
Oh,
that was awesome.
I was hanging out with the guys from work, and we were talking about sending each of the bad pictures, and I was just waiting for them to send me one so I could text back, "Oh, game on." Like, shit. You don't know who you're fucking with if you do that. And I have not yet... I've yet to get one from them, so... Either they know that I would just...
I'm pretty sure they are well aware that you would crush their soul.
Well, I do that anyways, but... I mean... It's like, where are you getting these pictures? You ever been to the I'm Going to Hell for This subreddit? Because it's got some fantastically horrible stuff. Like that wallpaper I sent Madman the other day. Holy shit. Of course, that was more out of, you know, I said it to him because I was stunned, and he said, okay, what are you making that noise for? But, I mean, don't frown because it's over. Anyways, so remember a few years back.
Happy that it happened.
Yeah. God, that horrible, horrible wallpaper.
Not that it's on any of my work machines.
Yet. Anyways, Oh, we're going to take Hasselhoff to the next level. Nobody else knows what I'm talking about.
Nope.
So, if you work in an office and somebody gets up and leaves their machine unlocked, the joke of Hasselhoffing is you would change their wallpaper to an image of David Hasselhoff. And this can get quite elaborate to where, like, you're setting system sounds and, you know, doing all kinds of shit, right? If you set system sounds, turn their volume all the way up before you leave their desk. But I'm just thinking, if you get these really, really bad pick wallpapers instead of Hasselhoff, you know, Nazi propaganda for a wallpaper, there's holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, people are going to HR over this prank.
It's like, what was this? This was escalation.
We do stuff like that at work too, but we call it Barbieing, because that's all you do is you go to Barbie.com if someone doesn't lock their computer.
So, remember a few years back with the digital photo frames that were coming pre-owned with malware? Because people are ordering all these cheap body cams for cops, because that's now the thing. you know, for like, you know, think you can thank the Black Lives Matter movement and shit like that for it. Not that police having cameras on them all over the place is a bad thing. I just that was kind of the last thing that kind of inspired all these departments to start ordering them. It comes out that a lot of them are installed with ConFlickr.
Great. So you go to download and plug it in.
You get your new body cam. You go to download the video off of it. It puts ConFlickr on your machine. And considering awesome. A lot of departments are probably still running XP. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Look, I haven't heard of ConFlickr in years.
I haven't either. I don't. What's the payload for that? I don't even remember.
It does brute force dictionary attacks against the administrator password, and a bunch of other stuff. I don't know what it actually does though.
Hmm.
Oh, it would join you to botnets. There were a bunch of variations on it, but most of them would they join you to a botnet, so you could be used to send spam or DDoS things or collect your banking information.
Now, just about everything that you purchase needs to be flashed before you use it.
Yeah, it really does. Fuck. It really does. To the point, it's gotten to the point that you can download. Microsoft has put up most of the Windows ISOs, so you can download them. It's gotten so bad. So you can do fresh installs of whatever OS, because you know you're gonna get the OS from the manufacturer. First thing, just format that machine into a fresh install, even if you're not going to go to Linux, if you're going to stick with Windows.
Yeah, exactly. That too, but...
anything. Just, yeah, printers.
All the pre-installed crap, though, that the vendors put on there, everyone's going to be reinstalling it right off the bat anyways. But.
Yeah. So, I love they list out some of the names. DownDub, DownADub, Keto, ConFlickr took hold in late 2008, a few days after Microsoft issued an emergency patch for a Windows vulnerability that allowed self-replicating exploits. Then a few months, ConFlickr had enslaved as many as 15 million Windows PCs. Its sprawling botnet of infected machines eluded the vigorous takedown efforts of the ConFlickr working group, which was made up of Microsoft and more than a dozen partners, blah, 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 blah. Turns out the damn thing is on these cameras. Yeah, it tries to run with Windows Auto Start when they insert these cameras because they show up as flash drives.
Yep, there you go.
Which means what probably happened is at one of the manufacturing plants, you know, Foxconn, somebody's got an, you know, whatever machine they're using to load the firmware on these probably has the damn thing on it. So it's just copying it on every time they load it up to flash the firmware on these.
It could be malicious, it could not be.
No, I doubt it's malicious on the manufacturer's part, but they're still sending out malware. Let's see. Last story up is from the Register, and it's detailing this technology called SilverPush, which is designed for collecting metrics on people watching TV ads. And the way it works is you install an app on your smartphone that uses the microphone. And I'm sure companies come up with some way to entice you to install a thing, or they'll just buy out somebody who's already got an app on a lot of phones, so Facebook or WhatsApp or Pinterest or something. And the idea is while a TV commercial is playing, it'll play a high-pitched ultrasonic tone that's high enough pitched that you can't normally hear it, but your smartphone's microphone can. And I guess it'll be a series of tones and pulses so that it can identify, you know, what ad you're seeing, so they can collect metrics on this.
What?
Yeah. So it plays an ultrasonic noise, your phone hears it, and is able to use it to identify that, okay, this is what you're watching right now.
And now people are going to start getting lots of headaches while watching television.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, here's a good reason to get yourself a dog. Dog starts freaking out. Oh, shit, they're tracking me again.
Yeah, turn the phone off.
Well, here's the question. Can most TV speakers even produce the kind of frequencies they're talking about? I think a lot of that's outside of the range of what a speaker will do.
You'd be surprised what all they can do.
I've read the spec sheets on them. They go pretty high, but I mean...
I'm sure they go higher than human hearing.
Yeah. What's weird is... You wouldn't have to go that far beyond either.
How high they go, how high human hearing is, varies depending on how old you are.
Yeah.
They could actually set something that most children and teenagers can't hear, or even adults, but would drive a fucking baby nuts.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. So you'd have people losing their minds because their kid would go nuts, and they wouldn't know why.
And you could have kids going nuts because they're being tortured from infancy by the television.
Oh, I'm sorry. You have TV phobia. We're going to have to medicate you.
God.
You know, my thing is, like, odds are, you know, any company that's going to be putting out an ad with some ultrasonic sound in it probably isn't going to manage to get a lot of people to install their app. But all they need to do, like, I could see, like, Facebook, for example, teaming up with a bunch of advertisers, installing this, and then just selling access to this sonic fucking monitoring.
Well, hell, Facebook was looking at a thing where it would continually scan your photos and run its facial recognition software so that if you took a photo of a friend, it would just pop up, oh, I see you took a photo of such and such. Do you want to tag them in this photo and upload it to Facebook?
Wow.
Yeah, it's getting pretty invasive.
So, you know, at this point, I'd say we're categorically have more monitoring than in Big Brother.
Oh, yes.
I'm just going to throw that out there.
I think this is like 1984,
I should say.
We passed 1984 in like 2005.
So this is why you need the $10 Android smartphone, is because you're going to get to the point where you have a dedicated phone for each app, because they're doing so much shit, you don't need them interfering with each other. And it's not even a security thing. It's you know, if I have Facebook and Pinterest installed on the same phone, the phone crashes because they're both so busy trying to slurp up all your data, they interfere with each other.
But dude,
that's one problem I have with some apps. They eat your data, and then you already have just your internet eating your data. Why the fuck don't you just go to the websites that you're interested in directly from your browser on your phone?
I know. I am so pissed off. Everybody and their dog wants you to install an app. Like,
I know.
Store I was going to for e-cigarette stuff, they had like a loyalty card or whatever. So, you know, you scan your card and you get points, so you get free juice and stuff like that. So I went in there the other day to buy some stuff. They're like, okay, your card doesn't do anything anymore. You have to install this app. And we'll just text you the link to this app. I'm like, no thanks, I'm good. And I am going to order my stuff online now.
Yeah, fuck that shit.
We had a restaurant we were checking out at work that has a rewards program, and I went ahead and I you see it for what it is a mile away. It's like, okay, I want to see just how bad this is before I block their number. Yeah, it wasn't actually that bad, but then here lately I've been getting one from them almost daily until I started blocking their number, because it was just like, it's like, you know what? They don't. They have good barbecue. They really do. But I don't need to hear about it every fucking day. So yeah, these things are. It's just getting.
So many apps out there are literally just the website. You know, Facebook app, perfect example.
No, it's not. It's not just the website. Otherwise, you just use the Facebook. You just use the app. No, or
well,
you
get
the
notifications.
It's the website plus the notifications plus the we can collect your contact list and you know everything else that the flashlight apps collect. And
although, you know, I got a new phone here recently, and I logged into Facebook for the first time the other day, and for like my once every 3 months login, and I actually found the website asked permission to push notifications to my phone. And I've never even seen that before. I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, but from the website? That's kind of
odd. Yeah, they all want it.
You need some sort of client.
That's what I thought. Like, I don't even know how that works.
No, they've got hooks into the browser straight up now.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
So, a couple of things. Actually, let's go ahead and do this. Yo! So I've accidentally closed a tab, not the in-map tab, the second thing for Digital Dojo, so I've got to find that real quick. But so the first thing is in-map 7 has been released, and if you don't know what in-map is, you have been living under a rock, or at least not listening to my show for very long. In-map is the network scanning tool. It is the default if you need to figure out what ports are open on a box. But they made several improvements. They've overhauled the scripting engine. They've improved IPv6. They've done some infrastructure and speed upgrades. They've done some overhauls on their SSL and TLS scanning, because that's been a big deal since NMAP 6 has come out. The TLS stuff has been a mess. They've upgraded the portability on it. So NMAP 7 is really kind of a big deal, something you kind of want to check out, and if you're using it regularly, something you need to look at. But of course, it's NMAP, like it's a core tool. So, I mean, I don't know. Sard, I know you use it.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, it was cool. I know it's been a long time since they've come out with an update for it too, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, they've done patches, but they haven't done a version release in a while.
Right. Yeah, I'm excited to try it out. See if it's, they're claiming, if it's quicker, that'd be nice. But I mean, I didn't see a whole ton of new features that I would use other than speed.
So you don't use the NSC scripting engine very much?
Not very much. Like doing this stuff for Poodle and Freak scans and stuff like that, I use a Nessus for.
Yeah, so
I don't really use
too,
it
so.
For that. It's
I'm
kind of
hoping
just ports.
The scripting engine will get some of that functionality, though.
Yeah. Yep. Cool, man. But yeah, it's good to see. Glad to know, it's not dead.
I have really absolutely lost this link. That is annoying.
Looks like 6.0 was released in May of 2012.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So it's been three years or so. I thought it was a lot longer than that, but I mean, not bad.
Yep. Okay, finally found the last thing I wanted to talk about in Digital Dojo. Deficiency Labs, or Detectify Labs, I should say, has done some exploration of Chrome extensions. And some of these Chrome extensions basically upload everything you do. Like, everything you do. Every URL, every link you click. I mean, it's crazy. But it's HoverZoom, SpeakIt, free smileys and emoticons, Eagle Get free downloader, ProxFlow, Emoji Input, Instant Translate, Facebook Color Changer, Flash Player Plus, Super Ad Block or Super Block Ad Blocker, Safe Browse, and JavaScript Error Notifier. The two there that really piss me off are the Super Block Ad Block and the Safe Browse. Because if they're, the reason you install Ad Blocker is to not get tracked, and if your Ad Blocker is tracking you, that kind of defeats the point.
Yeah, exactly.
That pisses me off. So right. They have an interesting article how they went through both the technical side of it, of looking at the tracking, as well as looking at how Google is helping these companies basically not advertise in the features how much they're tracking you. How you have to scroll down to see it in certain places, and how it's kind of hidden behind some of the language. But yeah, I mean, it's in the Chrome store, their app store that it's tracking you, but the legalese is pretty well masked, so the article's got a really good write-up on how they copy a lot of that. So,
It looks like I'm just having a look at the Chrome store. Just curious, like Super Block Ad Blocker, 5 stars reviews.
Yep.
I tried looking up the Safe Browser, didn't show up. That link was broken. So I just did a search, and there's another Safe Browser now that only shows 4,000 users, so it's got to be relatively recent. And it's showing 4 stars.
Yeah,
they
must have
gotten pulled down at some point and then added another one.
That's good. That's the tough part. I've recently told people, like, oh, yeah, you should go grab AdBlock, do this. And they go and search for AdBlock and which of this 9,000 other extensions that look exactly the same, that have damn near the same icon, which one of these do I install? It's like, well, if you misclick, it's going to track everything you do.
So, it's getting pretty bad. And what's worse is, for my Linux videos I've been talking about, it, the way I was going to recommend for watching Netflix and other things that were pretty specific You know, normally you need to do, because there's a couple of different ways to do Netflix on Linux, and one of them is pretty involved and sets up Wine and basically gets Silverlight to run inside Wine, and then you trick it so that your browser runs this extension even though it's wrapped up. And then the other way is just install Google Chrome. And the feature I want to talk about. Oh shit, I just lost my TeamViewer session. That's annoying. The feature I was going to talk about, or the method, was going to be compartmentalization. Basically, if I'm getting feedback. Hang on. Okay, there we go. If you know you need to watch, if you want to watch Netflix and you use Chrome to do it, that's fine. Just don't use Chrome to do your banking or you know anything that's sensitive. So if you need to do something and you know the thing's more likely to track you, you only do those functions that you absolutely have to do inside of the application that you don't trust.
Right.
So, you know, if you need to run Windows, you wrap it up in a virtual machine or compartmentalize it off to a machine that you don't do your main web browsing on or you don't do your main social media on. And, you know, these extensions that track everything you do, you know, that's a real discipline. And I'll admit it's a challenge to remember to do it, to switch browsers and, you know, It's hard, but
right. But the day and age is probably gonna require
we almost have to do that, or you're gonna get arrested for doing it. It's like, so we don't see enough data in your web history here. Why? what you hiding there?
Why are you not consuming enough?
We don't see enough credit card debt on file for you, and
so we're gonna have to start just having a bot browse the internet every so often.
I've heard lots of people have that idea that if you're running Windows 10 to run like a Python script in the background constantly feeding the tracking stuff with bullshit, so that, you know, sure, they've got all this profile data on you, but it's useless because it's so full of garbage you can't really filter it.
Yeah.
So I like that concept too, but
he went to the everywhere, but how much would that slow down your internet usage?
So that's all I've got. Is that right there? So
just before you close it out, I was just thinking, you know, let's say a large percentage of the internet population installed a Python script that just did everything. Imagine the massive increase in internet traffic. I bet you it would like do some unintentional damage to the internet infrastructure if enough people started running something like that.
Yeah. Not just the traffic. Think about the storage bills. Right before you distribute that script to everybody, buy stock in Western Digital and other people that make hard drives. So, you know, go get some NetApp and some. Who just bought? Yeah, Dell. You know, go get some Dell stock because Dell just bought EMC. Dell for and NetApp and who else does enterprise scale NAS?
I wasn't Oracle trying to hide my some. Traffic. I just wanted to troll every ISP on an existing.
All right. That's all I got. Anybody got anything they want to throw out before we close it?
Nope.
I think that's everything.
Yeah.